cry. It was more of a bleat than a cry, and it came from the door at the Royal Art Museum. A tall, thin figure was beckoning to the watchman, who strolled over.
"Yes, sir," said Colon, touching his helmet.
"We've had a burglary, officer."
"Burglary?" said Nobby.
"Oh, dear, sir,"
said Colon, putting a warning hand on the corporal's shoulders.
"Anything taken?"
"Yes. I rather think that white was a burglary, do you see?" said the man.
He had the attitude of a preoccupied chicken, but Fred Colon was impressed. You could barely understand the man, he was that posh. It was not so much speech as modulated yawning.
"I'm Sir Reynold Stitched, the curator of fine art, and I was walking through the long gallery, and, oh dear, they took the rascal."
The man looked at two blank faces.
"Methodia, rascal," he tried. "The Battle of Coombe Valley. It is a priceless work of art."
Colon hitched up his stomach.
"Ah," he said, "that's serious. We'd better take a look at it. The locale where it was situated in."
"Yes, yes, of course," said Sir Reynold. "Do come this way. I'm given to understand that the modern watch can learn a lot just by looking at the place where a thing was. Is that not so?"
"Like that it's gone?" said Nobby.
"Oh, yes, we're good at that."
"Quite so," said Sir Reynold. "Do come this way."
The watchman followed. They had been inside the museum before, of course. Most citizens had, on days when no better entertainment presented itself. Under the governance of Lord Vetinari, it hosted fewer modern exhibitions these days, since his lordship held views. But a gentle stroll amongst the ancient tapestries and rather brown and dusty paintings was a pleasant way of spending an afternoon. Plus, it was always nice to look at the pictures of big pink women with no clothes on. Nobby was having a problem.
"Here, Sarge, what's he going on about?" he whispered. "It sounds like he's yawning all the time. What's a gallery?"
"A gallery, Nobby. That's very high-class talking, that is.
I can hardly understand him."
"Shows it's high-class, Nobby. It wouldn't be much good if people like you could understand, right?"
"Good point, that," Nobby conceded. "I hadn't thought of that."
"You found it missing this morning, sir," said Colon, as they
trailed after the curator into a gallery still littered with ladders and dust sheets.
"Yes, indeed."
"So it was stolen last night, then?"
Sir Reynold hesitated.
"Not necessarily, I'm afraid. We have been refurbishing the long gallery. The picture was too big to move, of course, so we had it covered in heavy dust sheets for the past month. But when we took them down this morning, there was only the frame. Observe."
The rascal occupied, or rather had occupied, an actual frame some 10 feet high and 50 feet long, which, as such, was pretty close to being a work of art in its own right. It was still there, framing nothing but uneven, dusty plaster.
"I suppose some rich private collector has it now," Sir Reynold moaned. "But how could he keep it a secret? The mural is one of the most recognisable paintings in the world. Every civilised person would spot it in an instant."
"What did it look like?" said Fred Colon.
Sir Reynold performed that downshift of assumptions that was the normal response to any conversation with Ankh Morpork's finest.
"I can probably find you a copy," he said weakly. "But the original is 50 feet long. Have you never seen it?"
"Well, I remember being brought to see it when I was a kiddie, but it's a bit long, really. You can't really see it, anyway. I mean, by the time you get to the other end, you've forgotten what was happening back up the line, as it were."
"Alas, that is regrettably true, Sergeant," said Sir Reynold. "And what is so vexing is that the whole point of this refurbishment was to build a special circular room to hold the rascal. His idea, you know, was that the viewer should be wholly encircled by the mural and feel right in the thick of the action, as it were. You would be there in Coombe Valley. He called it panoscopic art. Say what you like about the current interest, but the extra visitors would have made it possible to display the picture as we believe he intended it to be displayed. And now this.
If you were going to move it, why didn't you just take it down and put it away nice and safe, sir?
You mean roll it up, said Sir Reynold, horrified. That would cause such a lot of damage.
Oh, the horror, no! We had a very careful exercise planned for next week, to be done with the utmost diligence.
He shuddered.
When I think of someone just hacking it out of the frame, I feel quite faint.
"Hey, this must be a clue, Sarge," said Nobby, who had returned to his default activity of mooching about and poking at things to see if they were valuable. "Look, someone dumped a load of stinking old rubbish here."
He'd wandered across to a plinth, which did indeed appear to be piled high with rags.
"Don't touch that, please," said Sir Reynold, rushing over. "Don't talk to me about Mondays. It's Daniellerina Powter's most controversial work. You didn't move anything, did you?" he added nervously. "It's literally priceless, and she's got a sharp tongue on her."
"It's only a load of old rubbish," Nobby protested, backing away.
"Art is greater than the sum of its mere mechanical components, Corporal," said the curator. "Surely you would not say that Caravaggio's 3 large pink women and 1 piece of gauze is just a lot of old pigment."
"What about this one, then?" said Nobby, pointing to the adjacent plinth. "It's just a big stake with a nail in it. Is this art, too?"
"Freedom? If it was ever on the market, it would probably fetch $30,000, said Sir Reynold.
"For a bit of wood with a nail in it?" said Fred Colon. "Who did it?"
"After he viewed Don't Talk to Me About Mondays, Lord Veterinari graciously had Ms. Powter nailed to the stake by her ear," said Stitch. "However, she did manage to pull free during the afternoon."
"I bet she was mad," said Nobby.
"Not after she won several awards for it. I believe she's planning to nail herself to several other things. It could be a very exciting exhibition."
"Tell you what, then, sir," said Nobby cheerfully, "why don't you leave the old big frame where it is and give it a new name, like Art Theft?"
"No," said Sir Reynold coldly, "that would be foolish."
Shaking his head at the way of the world, Fred Colon walked right up to the wall so cruelly, or cruelier, denuded of its covering. The painting had been crudely cut from its frame. Sergeant Colon was not a high-speed thinker, but that point struck him as odd. If you've got a month to pinch a painting, why botch the job? Fred had a copper's view of humanity that differed in some respects to that of the curator. Never say that people wouldn't do something, no matter how strange it was. Probably there were some mad rich people out there who would buy the painting, even if it meant only ever viewing it in the privacy of their own mansion. People could be like that. In fact, knowing that this was their big secret probably gave them a lonely, tight little shiver inside. But the thieves had slashed the painting out, as if they didn't care about making a sale. There were several ragged inches all along the... Just a moment. Fred stood back. A clue. There it was, right there. He got a lovely, tight little shiver inside.
"This painting," he declared, this painting which isn't here, I mean, obviously, was stolen by a
troll."
"My goodness, how can you tell?" said Sir Reynold.
"I'm very glad you asked me that question, sir," said Fred Colon, who was.
"I have detected, you see, that the top of the circular mural was cut really close to the frame," he pointed. "Now, your troll would easily be able to reach up with his knife, right, and cut along the edge of the frame at the top, and down a bit on each side, see? But your average troll don't bend that well, so when it come to cutting along the bottom, right, he made a bit of a mess of the job and left it all jagged. Plus, only a troll could carry it away. A stair-cop, it's bad enough, and a rolled-up mural would be a lot heavier than that."
He beamed.
"Well done, Sergeant," said the curator.
"Good thinking, Fred," said Nobby.
"Thank you, Corporal,"
said Fred Colon, generously.
"Or it could have been a couple of dwarfs with a stepladder," Nobby went on cheerfully. "The decorators have left a few behind. They're all over the place."
Fred Colon sighed. "You see, Nobby," he said, "it's comments like that, made in front of a member of the public, that are the reason why I'm a sergeant and you ain't. If it was dwarfs, it would be neat all round, obviously. Is this place locked up at night, Mr. Sir Reynold?"
"Of course, not just locked, but barred. Old John is meticulous about it, and he lives in the attic so he can make this place like a fortress."
"This would be the caretaker," said Fred. "We'll need to talk to him."
"Certainly you may," said Sir Reynold nervously. "Now, I think we may have some details about the painting in our storeroom. I'll just go and find them."
He hurried off toward a small doorway.
"I wonder how they got it out," said Nobby when they were alone.
"Who says they did?" said Fred Colon. "Big place like this, full of attics and cellars and odd corners, well, why not stash it away and wait a while? You get in as a customer one day, see, hide it under a sheet, take out the Muriel in the night, hide it somewhere, then go out with the customers next day. Simple, eh?" He beamed at Nobby. "You've got to outsmart the criminal main, see?"
"Or they could have just smashed down a door and pushed off with the Muriel in the middle of the night," said Nobby. "Why mess about with a cunning plan when a simple one will do?"
Fred sighed. "I can see this is going to be a complicated case, Nobby."
"You should ask Vimesy if we can have it, then," said Nobby. "I mean, we already know the facts, right?"
Hovering in the air, unsaid was, "Where would you like to be in the next few days? Out there, where the axes and clubs are likely to be flying, or in here, searching all the attics and cellars very, very carefully? Think about it. And it wouldn't be cowardice, right? 'Cause a famous mural like this is bound to be part of our national heritage, right? Even if it is just a painting of a load of dwarfs and trolls having a scrap. I think I will do a proper report and suggest to Mr. Vames that maybe we should handle this one," said Fred Colon slowly. "It needs the attention of mature officers. Do you know much about art, Nobby?"
"If necessary, Sarge."
"Oh, come on, Nobby."
"What? Tawny says what she does is art, Sarge, and she wears more clothes than a lot of the women on the walls round here, so why be sniffy about it?"
"Yeah, but..." Fred Colon hesitated here. He knew in his heart that spinning upside down around a pole wearing a costume you could floss with definitely was not art. And being painted lying on a bed wearing nothing but a smile and a small bunch of grapes was good, solid art. But putting your finger on why this was the case was a bit tricky. "No urns," he said at last.
"What urns?"
said Nobby. "Nude women are only art if there's an urn in it," said Fred Colon. This sounded a bit weak even to him, so he added, "Or a plinth. Both is best, of course. It's a secret saying, see, that they put in to say that it's art and it's okay to look at."
"What about a potted plant?"
"That's okay if it's in an urn."
"What about if it's not got an urn or a plinth or a potted plant?" said Nobby.
"Have you one in mind, Nobby?" said Colon suspiciously.
"Yes. The goddess Annoia arising from the cutlery."
Annoia is the Ankh-Morpork goddess of things that get stuck in drawers.
"They've got it here. It was painted by a bloke with three eyes in his name, which sounds pretty artistic to me."
"The number of eyes is important, Nobby," said Sergeant Colon gravely. "But in these situations you have to ask yourself, where's the cherub? If there's a little fat pink kid holding a mirror or a fan or similar, then it's still okay, even if he's grinning. Obviously you can't get urns everywhere."
"All right, but supposing..." Nobby began.
The distant door opened, and Sir Reynold came hurrying across the marble floor with a book under his arm.
I'm afraid there's no copy of the painting," he said. "Clearly, a copy that did it justice would be quite hard to make. But this rather sensationalist treatise has many detailed sketches, at least. These days, every visitor seems to have a copy, of course. Did you know that more than 2,490 individual dwarfs and trolls can be identified by armour or body markings in the original picture? It drove Rascal quite mad, poor fellow.
It took him 16 years to complete.
That's nothing, said Nobby cheerfully. Fred here hasn't finished painting his kitchen yet, and he started 20 years ago.
Thank you for that, Nobby, said Colon coldly. He took the book from the curator. The title was The Coombe Valley Codex. Med how, he said.
Well, he neglected his other work, you see. He was constantly moving his lodgings because he couldn't pay the rent, and he had to drag that huge canvas with him. Imagine! He had to beg for paints in the streets, which took up a lot of his time, since not many people have a tube of burnt umber on them. He said it talked to him, too. You'll find it all in there, rather dramatized, I fear.
The painting talked to him?
Sir Reynold made a face.
We believe that's what he meant. We don't really know. He did not have many friends. He was convinced that if he went to sleep at night, he would turn into a chicken. He'd leave little notes for himself saying, "You are not a chicken," although sometimes he thought he was lying. The general belief is that he concentrated so much on the painting that it gave him some kind of brain fever. Toward the end, he was sure he was losing his mind. He said he could hear the battle.
How do you know that, sir? Said Fred Colon. You said he didn't have any friends.
Ah, the incisive intellect of the policeman, said Sir Reynold, smiling. He left notes to himself, sergeant, all the time. When his last landlady entered his room, she found many hundreds of them stuffed in old chicken feed sacks. Fortunately, she couldn't read, and since she'd fixed in her mind the idea that the lodger was some sort of genius, and therefore might have something she could sell, she called in a neighbour, a Miss Adelina Happily, who painted watercolours, and Miss Happily called in a friend who framed pictures, who hurriedly summoned Ephraim Douster, the noted landscape artist. Scholars have puzzled over the notes ever since, seeking some insight into the poor man's tortured mind. They are not in order, you see. Some are very odd.
Order, then, you are not a chicken, said Fred.
"Yes," said Sir Reynold. "No, there is stuff about voices, omens, ghosts. He also wrote his journal on random pieces of paper, you know, and never gave any indication as to the date or where he was staying, in case the chicken found him. And he used very guarded language, because he didn't want the chicken to find out."
"Sorry, I thought you said he thought he was the chicken," Colon began.
"Who can fathom the thought processes of the sadlier disturbed, sergeant?" said Sir Reynold wearily.
And does the painting talk?" said Nobby Nobbs. "Stranger things have happened, right?"
"No," said Sir Reynold. "At least not in my time. Ever since that book was reprinted, there's been a guard in here during visiting hours, and he says it has never uttered a word. Certainly, it has always fascinated people, and there have always been stories about hidden treasure there. That is why the book has been republished. People love a mystery, don't they?"
"Not us," said Fred Colon.
"I don't even know what a mystery is," said Nobby, leafing through the codex. "Here, I heard about this book. My friend Dave, who runs the stamp shop, says there's this story about a dwarf, right, who turned up in this town near Coombe Valley more than 2 weeks after the battle, and he was all injured, 'cause he'd been ambushed by trolls and starving, right, and no one knew much dwarfish, but it was like he wanted them to follow him. And he kept saying this word over and over again, which turned out, right, to be dwarfish for treasure, right? Only when they followed him back to the valley, right, he died on the way, and they never found out nothing. And then this artist bloke found some thing in Coombe Valley and hid the place where he'd found it in this painting, but it drove him bananas like it was haunted, Dave said. He said the government hushed it up."
"Yeah, but your mate Dave says the government always hushes things up, Nobby," said Fred.
"Well, they do.
Except he always gets to hear about them, and he never gets hushed up," said Fred.
"I know you like to point a finger of scoff, Sarge, but there's a lot goes on that we don't know about."
"Like what exactly?" Colon retorted. "Name me one thing that's going on that you don't know about."
"There, you can't, can you?"
Sir Reynold cleared his throat. "That is certainly one of the theories," he said, speaking carefully, as people tended to after hearing the colon knob's brains trust crossing purposes. "Regrettably, Methodia Rascal's notes support just about any theory one may prefer. The current popularity of the painting is, I suspect, because the book does indeed revisit the old story, that there's some huge secret hidden in the painting."
"Oh," said Fred Colon, poking up, "what kind of secret?"
"I have no idea. The landscape was painted in great detail. A pointer to a secret cave, perhaps. Something about the positioning of some of the combatants. There are all kinds of theories. Rather strange people come along with tape measures and rather worryingly intent expressions, but I don't think they ever find anything."
"Perhaps one of them pinched it," Nobby suggested.
"I doubt it. They tend to be rather furtive individuals who bring sandwiches and a flask and stay here all day. The sort of people who love anagrams and secret signs and have little theories and pimples. Probably quite harmless, except to one another. Besides, why steal it? We like people to take an interest in it. I don't think that kind of person would want to take it home, because it would be too large to fit under the bed. Did you know that Rascal wrote that sometimes in the night he heard screams? The noise of battle, one is forced to assume. So sad."
"Not something you'd want over the fireplace, then," said Fred Colon.
"Precisely, Sergeant. Even if it were possible to have a fireplace 50 feet long."
"Thank you, sir. One other thing, though. How many doors are there in this place?"
"3, said Sir Reynold promptly, "but 2 are always locked."
"But if the troll, or the dwarfs," said Nobby, "or, as my junior colleague points out, the dwarfs, trade to get it out—"
"Gargoyles," said Sir Reynold proudly, "2 watch the main door constantly from the building opposite, and there's 1 each on the other doors, and there are staff on during the day, of course.
This may sound a silly question, sir, but have you looked everywhere?"
"I've had the staff searching all morning, Sergeant. It would be a very big and very heavy roll. This place is full of odd corners, but it would be very obvious."
Colon saluted. "Thank you, sir. We'll just have a look around, if you don't mind."
"Yeah, for urns," said Nobby Nobbs.
Vimes eased himself into his chair and looked at the damned vampire. She could have passed for 16. It was certainly hard to believe that she was not a lot younger than Vimes. She had short hair, which Vimes had never seen on a vampire before, and looked, if not like a boy, then like a girl who wouldn't mind passing for one.
"Sorry about the remark down there," he said. "It's not been a good week, and it's getting worse by the hour."
"You don't have to be frightened," said Cyril, "who isn't a troll. I'm quite clever, I don't mind hard work, and I've got excellent night vision. I can be useful. I want to be useful."
"Can you turn into a bat?" She looked shocked.
"What? What kind of a question is that to ask me?"
"Probably among the less tricky ones," said Vimes. "Besides, it might be useful. Can you?"
"No."
"Ah, well, never mind."
"I can turn into a lot of bats," said Sally. "One bat is hard to do because you have to deal with changes in body mass, and you can't do that if you've been reformed for a while. Anyway, it gives me a headache."
"What was your last job?"
"I didn't have one. I was a musician."
Vimes brightened up.
"Really? Some of the lads have been talking about setting up a watch band. Could they use a cello?"
"Probably not."
Vimes drummed his fingers on the desk. Well, she hadn't gone for his throat yet, had she? That was a problem, of course. Vampires were fine, right up until the point where suddenly they weren't. But in truth, right now, he knew she'd got it right. He needed anyone who could stand upright and finish a sentence. This damn business was taking its toll. He needed men out there all the time just to keep the lid on things. Oh, right now it was just scuffles and stone-throwing and breaking windows and running away, but all that stuff added up, like snowflakes on an avalanche slope. People needed to see coppers at a time like this. They gave the illusion that the whole world hadn't gone insane. and the Temperance League was pretty good and very supportive of its members. It was in the interests of all members that no one found themselves standing in a strange bedroom with an embarrassingly full feeling. They'd be watching her. "We've got no room for passengers in the watch," he said. "We're too pressed right now to give you any more than what is laughingly known as on-the-job training, but you'll be on the streets from day one. How are you with the daylight thing?"
"I'm fine with long sleeves and a wide brim. I carry the kit anyway."
Vimes nodded. A small dustpan and brush, a vial of animal blood, and a small card saying, "Help, I have crumbled and I can't get up. Please sweep me into a heap and crush vial. I am a black ribboner and will not harm you, thanking you in advance." His fingers rattled on the desktop again. She returned his stare. "All right, you're in," Vimes said at last. "On probation, to start with. Everyone starts that way. Sort out the paperwork with Sergeant Littlebottom downstairs, report to Sergeant Detritus for your gear and orientation lecture, and try not to laugh. And now you've got what you want, and we're not being official, tell me why."
"Pardon?" said Sally.
"A vampire wanting to be a copper," said Vimes, leaning back in his chair.
"I can't quite make that fit, Sally." "I thought it would be an interesting job in the fresh air, which would offer opportunities to help people, Commander Vimes."
"Hmm," said Vimes. "If you can say that without smiling, you might make a copper after all. Welcome to the job, Lance Constable. I hope you have—" The door slammed. Captain Carrot took two steps into the room, saw Sally, and hesitated. "Lance Constable von Humperding has just joined us, Captain," said Vimes.
Fine. Hello, miss," said Carrot quickly. "Sir, someone's killed Ham Crusher."
Ankh-Morpork's finest strolled back down toward the yard.
"What I do," said Nobby, "is cut the painting up into little bits like, a few inches across."
"That's diamonds, Nobby. It's how you get rid of stolen diamonds."
"All right, then. How about this one? You cut the mural up into bits the size of ordinary paintings, OK? Then you paint a painting on the other side of each one and put them in frames and leave them around the place. No one will notice extra paintings, right? And then you go and pinch them when the fuss has died down."
"And how do you get them out, Nobby?"
"Well, first you get some glue and a really long stick and—"
Fred Colon shook his head.
"Can't see it happening, Nobby."
"All right, then. You get some paint that's the same colour as the walls, and you glue the painting to the wall somewhere it'll fit, and you paint over it with your wall paint so it looks just like the wall."
"Got a convenient bit of wall in Maine, then?"
"How about inside the frame that's there already, Sarge?"
"Bloody hell, Nobby, that's clever," said Fred, stopping dead.